Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here this morning as we wrap up our week. We're also pleased to have with us once again David Sinnoh. He's president, CEO, Strategic Capital Bank and Trust. He is on the program every month. It's always a Friday in the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about personal finance. The way we do this is he begins and has a few comments to make. And then if you have questions about that or anything else that has to do with money management, investing, financial planning, I know that he'll be do his best to help you out. So that's what we'll do here. We'll get things started by saying good morning and welcome back.
Well, thanks so very much, David. And as always, it's a genuine pleasure to be with you. I'd like to take this opportunity to wish you, David, the wonderful staff at WILL, as well as, of course, all of the friends and listeners of WILL, a very joyous, healthy, and prosperous holiday season. Well, it is obviously the holiday season, even though it's darn cold out there, David, and gift-giving, I think, is on people's minds, so I thought I would spend a few minutes visiting about some of the ways of charitable giving, some of the financial advantages of charitable giving. Of course, our country is truly blessed by a citizenry which is very charitable-minded. Literally, millions of Americans make charitable donations to their places of worship, for example, on a weekly basis. Scores of millions of others of us donate to public charities, such as the United Way. You could name a thousand of them, the Salvation Army. Many of us, for example, support our alma maters, such as the University of Illinois, through the U of I Foundation, even WILL, the College of Law, you name it, there's a thousand different ways to support private and public charities. So the opportunities are just really very vast. At the same time, we are seeing some of the, well, let's call it the wealthiest Americans, such as Bill Gates and Ted Turner, literally donating billions of dollars to charitable causes. And much to their credit, they are challenging other super wealthy Americans and corporations to enhance their charitable giving as well. I believe Ted Turner really stepped to the forefront first, where he committed approximately $2 billion of his personal and corporate fortune to various charitable causes. Well, the billion-dollar gift, frankly, is out of my league, David, so perhaps, you and maybe Ed Kezar could get together and dip into your deep pockets and ante up a few million or billion for charity. But before we gift to the charities of our choice, let's understand some very simple tax rules about charitable giving and examine some ways to make your charitable dollars really go further. First of all, if you donate cash to a charity, and when I refer to a charity, I'm really referring to a charity that has a tax-exempt status. These are typically charities that have a 501c3 designation. Well, if we're going to donate cash to such a charity, you will receive an itemized tax deduction for the amount of the cash gift. So if you gift $5,000, $1, $100, whatever number, as long as it's a tax-exempt organization, you're going to be able to take an itemized deduction on your tax return. Now, the amount of your tax deduction may be limited, however, and when you gift cash, the limitation is 50% of your adjusted gross income. Now, adjusted gross income is the very last number on the last line of page 1 of your 1040 tax return. It's often referred to as AGI, adjusted gross income. Let me give you an example of how this works. Let's say your adjusted gross income with your spouse is $80,000. So that's the last line on page 1 of your tax return. Your tax deduction for giving cash to a charity would be limited to 50% of your adjusted gross income, or 50% of $80,000, and at least today my mathematics says that's $40,000. So you would be able in that year to essentially itemize $40,000 as an itemized deduction on your tax return. Now, if you gave more than $40,000 of cash, and when I refer to cash, checks, securities, whatever, to charity, the additional amount over that $40,000 would be carried forward to the next tax year and to your next tax return, and then it would be itemized on that return next year. So just because you give checks or cash in excess of 50% of your adjusted gross income, you don't lose that itemized deduction. It's simply that you can only use up to 50% of it, and then you take the rest of it and you carry it forward to the following years. Now, many people choose to gift appreciated stock or appreciated mutual funds to the charity of their choice. Unfortunately, with the way the market has performed the last few months, a lot of that appreciation that might have existed 4, 5, 6 months ago has disappeared by our very eyes. But of course, that's another day and another story. But if you do choose to gift appreciated stock, in such a case, the itemized deduction is really limited to 30% of your adjusted gross income. So again, in our example, if we were married filing jointly, we had $80,000 of adjusted gross income, we would multiply that $80,000 times 30%. 30% of $80,000 is $24,000, and we could take an itemized deduction for $24,000 if we gifted appreciated stock or appreciated mutual funds, for example, or other appreciated securities to charities or a charity of our choice. And of course, when we gift an appreciated stock, we don't have to pay the capital gains tax on that appreciation. It disappears because we're really not selling that stock. Had we sold the stock and recognized a gain, then we would have been assessed a capital gains tax, typically about 20% for the most part. But that just simply disappears. So there are two advantages. One, obviously, is you are doing something charitable, something altruistic, making those charitable contributions, and at the same time getting a tax deduction, being able to itemize the fair market value of that appreciated stock, and at the same time, you're not paying capital gains tax. So that's really a win-win-win situation. So if you're going to, over the next couple of weeks, make additional charitable contributions to one or more charities, consider the possibility of looking at gifting appreciated stock. Now, of course, there are other more complicated methods of giving, which are often referred to in the financial planning area as planned giving. And planned giving really often takes place over a series of years, and it's the art of planning your charitable contributions to provide maximum benefits, not only for yourself and your family and the organizations you choose, but also taking advantage of the tax ramifications of your planned giving. And of course, there are many ways that your philanthropic giving can blend with your own financial needs and tax planning. For example, some people opt for something called life income gifts. And this type of gift allows you or the beneficiary of your choice to enjoy income now, with the benefits passing to the charity in the future. So you could actually gift assets today to a charity but receive an income benefit for the rest of your life or for someone else, perhaps a beneficiary. And then at your death, the asset or the principal ends up with a trust. You would receive, of course, an immediate income tax deduction for the value of the charitable portion of your gift. And these are often called life income arrangements, and they typically include remainder trusts, something called charitable gift annuities, and even something called pooled income funds. Another vehicle is something called a charitable lead trust. This vehicle provides income to a charity today for a period of years determined by you, the donor. In other words, you're gifting assets into a charity today. The charity has the use of those assets. In other words, they can derive the income from those assets. And at the end of a specified term, the trust principal, along with perhaps its appreciated value, is distributed to your beneficiaries, named by you, and these typically would be family. So these are non-charitable beneficiaries. And this gift form provides tax benefits for both you, the donor, as well as the beneficiaries. And, of course, you allow the charity the use of those funds for a series of years. Again, everybody wins. Life insurance is also a typical investment or charitable vehicle. It can be gifted. In this gift form, you may name the charity, for example, as the beneficiary. So at your death, the death proceeds from the life insurance policy pass directly to the named beneficiary. In some cases, you may have a paid-up life insurance policy where essentially you no longer have to place funds or pay premium dollars into this life insurance policy. In other words, the policy carries itself, and you may end up giving this policy directly to a charity, and then you would claim an income tax deduction on what is referred to as the present value of the policy. Real estate may be another choice. It's not necessarily just gifting cash, gifting securities, or gifting life insurance. Some people gift real estate. Maybe it's that summer home. Maybe it's a vacation home. Maybe it's a farm or commercial real estate piece of property. Maybe it's vacant land. The choices are innumerable. But again, that's another method of gifting. If you are going to gift real estate to a charity directly, obviously the charity is much happier if you already have a buyer for that real estate. Generally, the charity doesn't want to hang on to that real estate. So typically what occurs is you would gift a piece of real estate into that charity, and that's by deed. And almost simultaneously, once it's received, the charity would then deed it to the ultimate buyer. Those dollars, of course, would end up in the charity. You would receive a tax deduction for the fair market value of that real estate, which frankly would be the price the third-party buyer would be paying in this particular case. So there's lots of things to think about. It's a great time of year to consider charitable giving. And David, I'd be happy to answer questions about charitable giving, of course, or other financial planning areas as well.
All right. Our guest, David Sinnoh. He's president, CEO, Strategic Capital Bank and Trust Company. He's with us every month on the show. It's always on a Friday, and we talk about personal finance, money management. And as Dave said, if you have any questions about this topic that he's been talking about or anything else that has to do with investing, financial planning, money management, give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have that toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, we'll save you some money. You can use the toll-free line. Calls on us, 800-222-9455. Just probably as if people need this kind of reminder, but it's probably a good idea to remind people anything that they're thinking about doing that will affect their tax status for this year, you have until the end of the month. After that, you're into the next year.
So it's, if it's too late.
IRA contribution, charitable contribution, whatever, anything, if you're doing this for tax purposes, now's the time.
Absolutely, now is the time. With the exception of an IRA contribution, you can still do that up to the time you file next year.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Gifting, so if you're going to gift to the Rene Sinnoh College Education Fund, which unfortunately is not tax exempt, but is clearly a charity desperately in need of funds, you can still make that gift this year. You probably will not get an itemized tax deduction for it. And speaking of gifting rules, remember if you are gifting to family, you can gift up to $10,000 to as many people as you want, whether they're related or not. So dad could gift $10,000 to four children. Mom could gift $10,000 to four children, so each of those children could end up with $20,000. It's not subject to tax. It's not subject to gift tax. When those children reinvest those proceeds, put them in a CD, put them in stock, and generate income or dividends, then the income or the dividends are subject to tax.
Yeah, it's good you corrected me. I misspoke. I want to make sure that people got that. You heard Dave when he said it, because he said it right. IRA contributions, you can do that up until the filing deadline next year. But the other stuff.
Other stuff. You bet.
We have a caller on a cell phone. We'll get right to them on line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I loved your little lecture. It's always so informative. But I have a question specific to the category of people with special needs that are attention deficit and impulsive about money. I have a son and a husband in that category. And I'm trying to figure out what's the best strategies to deal with that reality so that there is some money put away and future and all that other good stuff.
So are you telling me that you have a husband and a son who are spenders?
Yes, except even more impulsive than most.
More impulsive.
Yes, because they have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Yes.
So when their meds aren't working, neither is their brain, and they'll do things that aren't wise choices financially.
Okay. Well, this is not an easy question, and I really don't have a lot of experience in it. Just off the top of my head, obviously these kinds of folks shouldn't be carrying, one, a lot of cash, or two, a lot of credit cards with them.
That's true.
So have you been able to sort of limit that?
Effectively now, after everything's been banged up to the limit and we're on a debt management plan, but my thing is like, I've heard that sometimes what you do for children is have a trust where they can't ever really get to the capital, but can only live off the dividends or something like that. Like, you can lock it up so they can't, like, blow the whole wad.
Well, that is true. You can certainly set up a trust, and that type of trust would be an irrevocable trust. Mm-hmm. It's irrevocable. And you would actually be parting with dollars, placing them inside a trust, and then the trust language would explain exactly how those dollars could come out pertaining to some kind of identifiable standard. So, for example, maybe the beneficiary of that trust, your son, could be utilizing only the income or the dividends from that trust.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of invading principal, the principal could only be invaded by the trustee. You may be the trustee, or you maybe have a corporate trustee,
right,
and could only be invaded according to an identifiable standard for education, health, welfare, so that there is some type of identifiable standard in which the trustee can rely on
for making
specific distributions for the benefit of the beneficiary.
Typically
in that type of trust, there is additional language which is drafted that the income and the dividends do not need to be paid directly to the beneficiary. They can be paid directly to the vendor who provides the services, to another relative, to a third-party guardian, to another individual who then takes that money and pays the bills on behalf of this particular beneficiary.
So it could be a management program for paying whatever living expenses or other things are necessary.
Absolutely.
I got you.
Now, this is a very special kind of trust. There are several attorneys in Champaign. Are you calling from our area? What area are you calling from?
I live in Champaign-Urbana. I'm coming in from Dewey and Fisher.
Okay.
Blowing shut, just so your audience knows that.
I can believe it. It's getting nasty out there. But in any event, there are a number of very qualified attorneys in Champaign County who are familiar with this kind of trust. It's not exactly what's called a special needs trust, but it's very close.
Okay.
And there is specific statutory language which would be incorporated into such a trust.
Would this work also for grandparents? Because they've told me they have a trust for our kids' college education, but I don't think they're doing anything based on the reality of my son's, you know, needs.
Well, certainly your grandparents could set up a trust. They would be the grantors of the trust.
Uh-huh.
They could even be the beneficiaries during their, the trustees during their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You could be the trustee. You could be the successor trustee. And again, this same kind of language could be incorporated in a trust,
mm-hmm,
and your grandparents certainly could set something up like this. And there may even be a way of doing this where they would be placing assets inside this trust. And because of the gift and federal estate exemptions that exist for each of them, $675,000 each,
right,
if it were set up correctly, there may not even be any gift tax consequences with such a trust.
Yeah, well, they live out of state. I don't know if state laws change how that works.
Well, they could establish a trust under the laws of the state of Illinois.
Oh, they can.
Sure they could.
Oh, I got you. Oh, I'm learning a lot today. Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking to that. I appreciate that information.
Right, and again, I just urge you that if you were going to go down that road, you would need to retain corporate counsel,
mm-hmm,
competent counsel, who are familiar with these kinds of trusts. And again, there are many people in Champaign County who are familiar with these kinds of trusts.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for the call. We'll continue. The next person is here in Champaign, locally, line number one. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious on David Snow's comments on the relationship between the reduction or elimination of death taxes in the future and its correlation to the amount of dollars flowing into charities at that point in the future.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, but charities were very, very concerned over the last several years that if we eliminated death taxes or we reduced income tax rates, that less money would pour into charities. That was a major concern because the theory was that a great deal of the motivation for charitable giving were the tax advantages of charitable giving.
Right.
Now, probably one of the foremost authorities on charitable giving in the country is a person who is at the U of I Foundation. That's Bill Sturtevant. Bill is one of the major people in the country, lectures all over the country, has produced many books, seminars, just brilliant on charitable giving. And Bill has pretty well conclusively demonstrated that that is only one motivation for charitable giving. And tax considerations is not even the major motivation. In fact, I think of the 10 major motivations, it's somewhere down between 5 and 10 on the list. And what indeed has happened, in spite of lower income tax brackets over the last 15 years, in spite of increasing estate tax exemption equivalents, so less money is really being taxed at the estate level, more and more money is pouring into charities. And in fact, it's not only arithmetically increasing, it's almost geometrically increasing in a number of situations. And maybe that's because of the large amounts of wealth that have been created in America over the last 5 or 10 years as a result of the stock market, although some of that may be dissipating quickly the last few months. But in actuality, charities are taking in record amounts of money. So it has really not had an impact to date. Now, whether the total elimination of estate taxes would have some impact, probably yes. But I don't think a lot because, again, the motivation for charitable giving goes far beyond the tax issues. My opening discussion, of course, was saying, look, if you are going to give to charity, you want to support that charity, let's do it intelligently. Let's at least look at a tax advantage way of doing it. But your question is really a very good one. And I think Bill Sturtevant at the U of I Foundation, who is one of the directors of planned giving and just a very important cog in that whole program, really put it best that people really give for reasons other than taxation. They really give because they sense a wanting to leave a legacy and really support something that is important to them.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you for taking the call.
All right. We are at our midpoint here in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly show on personal finance. Our guest is David Sinnoh. He's president and CEO of Strategic Capital Bank and Trust. And for a long time now, he's been doing the show with us, coming by every month. We discuss different sorts of financial topics, but the idea is that you shouldn't feel that you have to limit yourself to whatever the introductory topic was. If you have other kinds of questions about financial planning, about investing, you want to talk about mutual funds, you're thinking about sending your kids to college, your retirement, anything like that, I know that Dave will do his best to help you out, and all you have to do is call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have that toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455.
David, I want to jump in and talk about another area that is often misunderstood and another opportunity for charitable giving, which I think makes an awful lot of sense. I've talked about this in the past, but I want to highlight it again, and that is we have lots of people in America who have large amounts of money in IRA programs, 401k programs, profit-sharing plans, pension plans, mainly because they worked a long time. And they simply invested year after year after year. The University of Illinois, there's a good number of people with large amounts of money, for example, in 403b plans. They're all basically the same thing. People put in money into these plans, got an upfront tax deduction for doing that. This money grew tax deferred, and then the point is that when one retires and needs cash to enjoy the fruits of their labor, they start taking money out of these IRA programs, pension programs, etc., and pay current income tax on them. However, it can very possibly happen that let's just take someone who has a $500,000 or $1 million IRA account. It's not that unusual anymore. And that person dies, and the beneficiary of that IRA, let's say, is the surviving spouse. If the surviving spouse is living, at the moment that the surviving spouse receives those IRA proceeds in sort of what's called a rollover situation, there is no estate tax consequences. There are no income tax consequences. But let's take the example where there is no surviving spouse, and this $1 million IRA is suddenly left for the benefit of the children. So we have a child who is the beneficiary. Well, first of all, any of these tax-deferred assets that are existing at an individual's death that do not pass directly to a charity or to a surviving spouse are subject to both federal estate tax and federal income tax. So someone, let's say, who has an estate of $2 million, and of that $2 million, $1 million of it is in an IRA. Now, that's not probably you or I today, but maybe it's you or I tomorrow. Let's just take that example. And a $2 million estate, when we start thinking about the level of federal estate tax on that estate, those marginal dollars start to be taxed at about 50 cents on the dollar. Imagine that. And indeed, they go all the way up to 55% at $3 million. So we could have a situation where someone leaves a very large sum in an IRA, and 50% of those proceeds could be, well, they disappear. They go to that bottomless pit in Washington, D.C., 50 cents on the dollar. So now our million-dollar IRA has $500,000 to be distributed to the child who is the beneficiary. And it's very possible, if the child takes this money and may have no choice but taking this money outright, well, that $500,000 is going to now be subject to income tax because those IRA proceeds were never subject to income tax. And that income tax rate would be 39.6, call it 40%. 40% of the remaining $500,000 is $200,000. So let's see. $500,000 went for estate tax, $200,000 went for income tax. Fully 70% of these IRA proceeds, which had been gathered and carefully shielded over many, many years, 70 cents of every dollar ends up in the coffers of the government. 30% goes to the child. What's the bottom line? The IRAs, the pension funds, those are wonderful vehicles to leave to charities. Because if ultimately, after your spouse passes away, and you only are having children or someone else who is a non-spouse left as the beneficiary, 70 cents could whistle to the government, where if you made the charity or a series of charities the beneficiary, 100% of your money ends up with the charity. So the choice is yours. Would you rather have the government distribute your IRA, or would you rather distribute your IRA? And that's how I explain it to my clients at our firm. And overwhelmingly, a large number of them say, well, this would be ridiculous to have 70 cents on the dollar go to the government and only 30 cents to my kids. Let's leave a dollar to charity, and I think my kids maybe can get along without the 30 cents, or maybe we'll buy an inexpensive life insurance policy that they can own outright. We can gift them the premiums, and they can still get their 30%. But it's almost unconscionable to see these large amounts of money just end up being in taxes. That would just be an unconscionable situation. Bottom line, IRAs, pension funds, any kinds of tax-deferred instruments make wonderful vehicles for charitable giving at the second death of the spouses, because then they start to get hammered with income tax and estate tax. Not at first death, because if you leave a surviving spouse, by law, then that beneficiary has to be your spouse unless he or she has signed off on the paperwork. But then when the spouse dies at second death, that's the time to make the contingent beneficiary of the IRA a series of charities. You can do that in a number of ways, and I'll come back to that. I know we have phone calls waiting, so right. I just wanted to bring up that topic.
Other questions are welcome. If you have some investment or financial planning concern, I know that Dave would be happy to talk with you and try to help you out, give you some advice. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and anywhere you can hear us, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller here next up is Aurora, line 4. Hello?
Yes, hi, good morning.
Good morning.
And season's greetings again to everyone. And had two questions. One, I got 11 pieces of stock through a spinoff, and they're NCR, and they now want me to decide whether I should dispose of them because they will not keep the 11 pieces of stock as such. They want me to buy $2,000 worth more stock to add to that or dispose of the 11 shares I have.
Well, you have 11 shares individually. Do you actually have the share certificates?
No. No,
all right.
I do not.
So they're held at the company in book entry form?
Yes.
Well, you could request those certificates, those 11 shares.
Yes.
And they would send you the 11 shares, and you could just hold them, for that matter. Alternatively, what's happened here is that companies don't like to deal with small shareholders.
Yes, I understood that right away.
You bet, because it's expensive. They have to send you all the paperwork and all of these proxies and all of this business, so they're going to be cutting down a lot of trees just to send you paperwork for your 11 shares.
Yes.
So they want you to round up to a round lot of shares, perhaps as much as 100 shares, at least 50 shares, whatever.
Well, it's 2,000. It's over $2,000.
$2,000. You are under no compunction, no legal basis for having to do that. There's no requirement.
Really?
No. You can just say, send me my 11 shares, and I'll continue to be a shareholder. Thank you very much.
Really?
Absolutely.
See, I have to beg ignorance. I did not read the paperwork. I do not have time these days for that kind of reading. I just can't.
Well, it's pretty difficult to read through that material anyway. It'd take a Philadelphia lawyer to figure it out. Bottom line is, you can call them up or send them a letter and say, send me my 11 shares. Thank you very much.
Really?
Absolutely. Next question. You had a second question.
My second question is this. We evidently have a new president. What can we expect of him? Indifferences or sameness as Clinton?
Well,
what can we expect from a Republican president?
You know, I'm really not in the speculation business, but
okay.
But I listened just probably to the same speech you heard. And I think it's going to be difficult to accomplish a lot early in the game. So
yes,
I think the next few months, I don't think there's going to be a lot accomplished. I think the real question that will be interesting is to see what kind of tax package, if any, gets through the Hill. You'll remember that one of the hallmarks of the Bush campaign was to eliminate estate taxes. So it'll be very interesting to see. What I hear from my colleagues, friends, accountants, planners, some of my friends in Washington, D.C., they tell me that probably the best thing that people could hope for on the estate planning front is to increase the amount of assets that will eventually be exempt, if you will, from federal estate taxes. In the year 2006, we're supposed to make that number up to $1 million. So if your estate was $1 million or less, including all of your assets, life insurance, IRAs, everything, property, then your estate would not be subject to estate tax. Bush, of course, wants to eliminate estate taxes in totality, regardless of the size of your estate. And what I'm hearing is that that number, that $1 million number, may go up some, maybe $2 to $3 million. That seems to be a compromise position that's being bandied about. But I think it's going to be tough the next few months to see what, if anything. And David's a lot more talented in that area to pontificate and talk about that than I am. But it's certainly going to be fun to watch, isn't it?
I don't know. It's according to how your finances are. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just real quick, it has been said, actually caller gave me a hard time once about saying it, that the number of estates in this country that end up having to pay taxes are relatively small because, as you say, you can have an estate. I'm not sure what the number is now.
675.
675. So we're talking about going to a million. So let's say, supposing that we said $5 million. You could have an estate of $5 million and not pay any taxes. Then, how many estates would in this country would still be paying taxes?
1%.
1%.
1%.
All right. Let's go to Urbana for another caller here. Line one. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
I had another question about the IRAs. When I die and my children are going to inherit all this money from my IRA, I heard that they didn't have to take it all at once, that they could take it in increments. Is that true or not?
That is true.
Okay, so that would help with the taxes that they'd have to pay.
It may, if your children want to take it in increments.
Uh-huh.
There's no requirement that the children take it in increments. Typically, in most IRA situations, children will have the opportunity to take it at least over a 5-year period of time. So that the first year they take one-fifth, the next year one-fourth, one-third, one-half, one-over-one. So if you have three or four beneficiaries...
I have three.
You have three. All of the children have to agree as to the format of taking that money.
Uh-huh.
If one of the children insists on taking cash, the other ones can't take it over 5 years.
Oh.
All right?
Uh-huh.
So it's important to discuss this with your children and explain to them that they would be ahead somewhere way, way down the road when you're no longer here, that if there are IRA proceeds remaining, that they would have to take a careful look at their income tax situation to see what would be the most intelligent way to take that money.
Okay.
So, but typically it would be over a five-year period of time.
So 5 years is the limit to stretch it out.
Well, it depends. There are certain cases where with a husband and wife situation and monies have not come out of an IRA, children may be able to take it over their life expectancy.
Well, then how do you arrange that?
Well, it depends upon the age of the IRA individual, and it also depends upon whether or not that individual is already accessing IRA proceeds.
The children, you mean?
No, whether the person who owns the IRA is already accessing IRA proceeds, taking minimum distributions out of their IRA.
That would be me.
Right.
Yeah.
So in your particular case, the way you are set up currently, you would at least be able to utilize the five-year rule, which for most people, especially with three children, is more than adequate.
Uh-huh.
But the kids will still be taxed
at
their highest marginal rate.
But not so much.
Maybe or maybe not, because depends. They take all their other income, and then they layer this amount on top of it. So this amount, your IRA monies really are taxed at the children's highest marginal rate when the children start taking it. Maybe they're in a 28% tax bracket, maybe 31, 36, 39.6. Maybe those rates are going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it is at that time. Your job is just to stay healthy and enjoy your money.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Champaign, line number two.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, thanks.
Good. In a situation where estate tax will become an issue, and the goal of the parents is to maximize the amount of money that goes to the children, that is, they do not want to contribute, what's the best strategy for seeing that the government gets the least amount of the estate?
Well, there are a number of strategies. If you really have a very substantial asset base today, one strategy simply is to give the maximum allowable exemption amount away today. Here's an example. Let's say a family has $5 million. They're very comfortable. They have other monies coming in.
Mm-hmm.
They have other income properties. Each of the spouses, husband gives $675,000 to children today. Other spouse gives $675,000, maybe outright or maybe in trust. So you have now used up your exemption amount under the law. You don't have to wait until you die to use up that exemption amount.
Sure.
And that $675,000 now appreciates in your kids' estates, not in your estates. This makes a lot of sense where you know you have an asset that is going to be rapidly appreciating. That's one technique. There are many other techniques. We've talked in the past about a technique called a family limited partnership, where you essentially convey assets into a family limited partnership. You are the general partners. You control the assets in that partnership. You even can derive all the income from the assets in that partnership. But the children become partners in this enterprise, and each year you convey them units or partnership interests in this enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
They are limited partners. They really have absolutely no control, no voting control. And as a result, even though you convey $10,000 a year of units to them, or your wife conveys an additional $10,000, that's $20,000 of units to a child, because that child really can't do anything with those units, they're not really worth $20,000. So as a result of that, one can take a minority discount, and you may be able to gift $30,000 of units each year to each of these kids instead of $20,000, thereby increasing and taking advantage of the $10,000 tax-free rule each year. Follow that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a choice. Making beneficiaries of IRAs, charities, that's a choice.
Okay.
Purchasing last-to-die life insurance policies and making the children the owners of those policies. And so they have proceeds at second death to pay estate taxes. That's a choice. Setting up something called AB trusts inside your own estate plan and using generation skipping language, that's a choice. There's all kinds of moves on the checkerboard. What it really means is sitting down with a financial planner who really knows his or her business in concert with a good estate planning lawyer to really plan things out.
Okay. Do I have a little bit of time?
Sure.
Sure. Two things. Number one, the $10,000 a year tax-free gift, does that count against the currently $675 estate?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's in addition to the $675.
Okay, good. The second thing, the way things are set up now, as I understand it from my parents, and I'd be the beneficiary in this situation, they have their money essentially in certain kinds of investments, IRAs and some untaxed things. But what they have done is take out an insurance policy that will help to pay for any estate tax.
That works so long as that insurance does not pass through their estate. That's very important,
mm-hmm.
which means either you're the owner of the policy or it's in a special trust referred to as an irrevocable insurance trust or crummy trust,
mm-hmm.
which then means that it won't pass through their estates at second death.
Right, and that's the situation.
Okay.
So that sounds like a decent plan.
Sounds like a decent plan.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's continue. We'll go next, I think, to caller in Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I've got a kind of a curious question. I hear ads on the radio for e-bonds, double e-bonds, and they never mention the i-bonds. They're both government issue. They're practically the same thing, side by side. But one pays 6.5%, the other one pays 4%. Why don't they push the i-bonds? The government.
I'm not really certain. I'd have to really think through that because the difference is simply the inflationary risk, which comes back in terms of additional principal that's built into the bond. I think probably a lot of it has to do with just familiarity.
Uh-huh.
It's just easier to push that, and people are more familiar with that form of investment.
Well, there's a big difference in the payout on those. I think the E's are paying 4, and the I's, they dropped the I's from 7.4 to 6.5. November 1st, which isn't a bad rate, tax, state tax free, and you can hold them for 30 years.
No question about it.
Yeah. The only gimmick, if you cash it in before 5 years, they're penalized.
That's the problem. You've got to hold them a minimum of 5 years, uh-huh. so you're subject to some interest rate risk.
All right. Now, the other thing, I've got that same thing with NCR. Isn't that National Cash Register that AT&T bought out?
It may be. I thought she said NCI.
NCR.
Oh, this is NCR?
Yes.
Don't
they own develop that barcode system that you see everywhere?
Perhaps. I'm not familiar with all of their technologies, but probably.
And this Lucent, isn't that the old Bell Laboratories?
It's a spinoff, yes.
Spinoff, just part of it, not
yes.
the whole complete thing. Yeah, that stock is down, way down.
Yeah, but hey, do you own Lucent?
Yes, I do.
You know, you ought to hang on to your Lucent. I heard from, and I never suggest anything, but I've heard a lot of rumors on the street that Lucent may be a takeover candidate.
Right, Nokia, this little pipsqueak country in Finland, and they can buy out Bell Labs. That's really something.
How about
well,
that?
Well, aren't they the biggest cell phone manufacturer in the world?
They
in
are.
Europe. Ericsson, Nokia, and Motorola, I guess. Mm. But Lucent was up to $78, and I think now it's dropped to almost a little less than 15 here.
Yes, I was talking to a friend of mine who worked for Lucent who had a very, very large position in his pension fund and wanted to retire and watched it get, well, not halved, but 78%.
Yeah, that's
called not being properly diversified.
He had too much in one.
Way too much.
One basket.
You bet.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go here to Urbana for somebody else. Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Do you mind turning to the theoretical side of the inheritance tax?
I don't mind turning to it. You go ahead.
Good. It's gotten a lot of rather bad press lately with the death tax terminology. But actually, isn't this one of the least burdensome taxes when you think if you do away with it, we'll have to pay upfront with income tax to make up for the shortfall in federal taxes?
Well, that presumes, of course, that tax revenues don't continue to expand.
Well,
it also presumes that our government will continue to spend. That, at least the second item of that, I would certainly agree to. I don't think the government ever is going. We're the government, of course. We just have a voracious appetite for spending.
I think a more important consideration is, though, I would agree with most people that we should increase the exemption, because $1 million isn't what it was when that exemption was.
No, it's not inflation adjusted. You're absolutely right.
$5 million certainly, I think, wouldn't be bad. But if it isn't there at all, isn't there a certain danger of having happened here what happened in England in the 2 centuries ago now, not the last century, where vast accumulations of money were assembled, and actually you arrive at a hereditary plutocracy if you don't put any limits on those accumulations at the very high levels. And unfortunately, at least in England, that hereditary plutocracy wasn't very productive. They tended to just waste the accumulation.
Well, that may be, although in this country, I think if you look at some of the wealthiest people in this country, I would disagree in the sense that they are some of the most entrepreneurial and have made some of the greatest technological advances. But I'm not disagreeing with you totally theoretically. It sounds like a very interesting conversation, but I'm not sure that I can think about it here, and it's not probably exactly what we ought to be visiting about here. But you certainly raise, I think, important philosophical issues.
Well, I think what you generally deal with is much more to the point, and I certainly agree with the hands-on approach. I want to do exactly the same thing. I'd like to see my nieces get as much as I can give them. But our great charitable givers, the Rockefellers and the others of that group, many of them really feared giving their children too much, that they wouldn't have the incentive to...
I agree with you again. Absolutely.
Well, when we're, I appreciate the comments of the caller. We're at a point where we're, I'm sorry to say, going to have to stop, and because we've used our time, and we have a couple of people we cannot take. However, Dave will be back next month, and we'll do it again. In the meantime, by the way, for personal finance advice and information, tune in to the program Sound Money. We have it Saturday mornings at 10 here on AM 580. They discuss various financial and investing topics, and there also is the possibility to call in and ask questions on the show. So that is another resource for you. You might check that out. And thank you.
Well, David, it's been a genuine pleasure, and I just sincerely hope, David, that it's not very long in the future where you're going to have this gigantic estate tax issue and that you're going to come around to the thinking that $5 million isn't so bad.
I think right now if $5 million isn't so bad, if I had it, I'd probably be real excited about it. Then we could talk about how I would invest it.
Very
Thank
good.
You very much for being here.